We have an exciting lineup, we believe, today. We have Dr. Norm Curlin. I see Dr. Curlin has already decided to join us very early. Good morning, Dr. Curlin.
Good morning, Russell.
glad that you're calling in on such a timely manner. We are excited about having you share with the listeners this morning. We have a host of questions that we want to ask you, and we want you to share with our listeners when it comes to the solutions to these problems that seem to be plaguing our society that nobody seems to be able to address.
Well, I'm delighted being with you, Russell. It's always an honor.
Well, the honor is all ours. The federal government just lifted the debt ceiling. Can you explain what was behind the debt crisis? Can you do that for us?
Well, let me explain and bring it down to a family level. But first, let's look at a couple of numbers. If you look at the total revenues that came into the federal government, it was about $2.1 trillion. $1 trillion, just think of it in terms of 12 zeros.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And the federal budget was about $3.8 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
So that left you with new debt.
Okay.
Of $1.6 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what that adds up to, Russell, is that there's a national debt. We've been adding to the national debt. This all goes all the way back to the First World War, about the time that the Federal Reserve was formed in 1913. The Congress had to do something about that because they were saying it's unsustainable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that debt would be unsustainable. So they cut out about $38.5 billion, about 1% of the budget. Now, let's carry that to a family that you know, that we know. Just so some of them may be unemployed family. Let's think of a family of four.
Uh-huh.
Okay, if we take out and just drop eight of those zeros, that the income of that family would have been about $22,000.
Okay.
And then they went ahead and spent not $22,000, but $38,000.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Well, they were able to put it on the credit card, $16,000 on a credit card.
Right, right.
Okay, so that looks pretty bad. But then they already had, when you added that to their credit card debt, they had $143,000 in credit card debt. Okay.
Yeah, so they were adding debt on top of debt.
Debt on top of debt. So, exactly.
So the debt that we're looking at now that is considered new debt, which is what the government is talking about now, is in addition to the debt that we already have.
Right. Okay. And just think about it in family terms. Now, how is a family going to do that? Some of these families may be unemployed and be on welfare or whatever. Some of them may have jobs, but there are over 20 million people who are either unemployed, underemployed, who can't get jobs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
so that's
mm-hmm.
today's economy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And here you have one of those families I'm pointing out went well over their heads in spending. And that's what the federal government did.
Well, let me ask you this, too, Dr. Curlin, because the new debt, the $1.6 trillion new debt, it came about because of additional spending in this fiscal period?
Right. That's exactly right. What happens is that only 60% of all that they wanted to spend came from taxes. So in other words, they're going in over their heads because only 60% of what they want to spend was coming from taxes. Where did the rest come from?
That's right. So in other words, the only way that government really produces revenues, if you will, is through taxes.
Yeah, through taxes, or they went ahead and borrowed. So they created money debt, federal debt.
Uh-huh.
And they sold it to other countries. China is our biggest creditor because they have such a trade balance with the United States
mm-hmm.
now,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
trade surplus, that we had to borrow from China and many other countries. In the meantime, or from the rich, they go and buy treasury paper, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
they considered it to be sound. But is it sound when you keep piling on debt year after year? And if you look at, and this is very important to understand, you got to look at not just the figures I gave you. It's a lot worse than that.
Mm.
Because if you begin to project all of the future obligations, entitlements for pensions, Social Security, Medicare, that debt is something like 50, these were numbers that came a number of years ago, about 3-4 years ago. It was $58 trillion of hidden debt. In other words, we're pushing the problem off from today to our children,
grandchildren,
our great-grandchildren. Yeah. We're just pushing all those problems onto their laps.
Yeah, yeah.
And it amounts to...
irresponsibility.
It's unsustainable.
Yeah, unsustainable. Dr. Kirtland, please don't go anywhere. We are excited about what you're sharing with us this morning. Let us take a quick break. We have to do a little bit of work here. So stay with us, and we'll look forward to our continued discussion around the issues that we're facing. And we're going to talk more about some of the solutions to these problems.
Right.
Give us a moment, Dr. Kirtland, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Challenge this morning on WKND, 1480 AM on your radio dial. We're talking about solutions to the problems, dealing with the desperation and the desolation that is in our society. America should be a beacon to the rest of the world. And Dr. Kirtland and I are going to tell you and talk to you about how and why we ought to live up to what we have been proclaimed to do. Be a society that is fair and just. We'll be right back with you on The Challenge. Dr. Kirtland, thank you for holding on. Let's keep going. What's your take on a permanent, long-term solution to this problem that we're facing, this crisis, this, this epidemic of spending? Give us your thoughts on that, if you would, please.
Sure, Russell. You can't consume. Let's keep it on very simple, basic terms.
Okay.
You can't consume what isn't being produced.
Right.
So our challenge is to figure out how all of the wasted human beings and the tremendous technology that's out there, new kinds of technology that we've developed for war, some of those technologies that could be used to make life better for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to look not just at America, we have to look at the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so keep it on a very simple, common sense level. You can't consume what isn't produced.
Right.
Now,
right.
You can turn all of that into very rapid growth rates if, in fact, the system were changed. And that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's the tax system, the monetary system, the credit system. We use the wrong kind of credit. The kind of credit I described before is non-productive credit. It
mm-hmm.
doesn't produce anything that you can put in your mouth.
So the credit that they're using, that they're borrowing from to pay down the debt, doesn't produce any revenues.
Exactly.
Okay.
It doesn't produce any revenues. Or in the finance world, it is non-financially sustainable debt.
In
other words, good debt, investment debt, is when you buy things that pay for themselves.
Mm-hmm,
they
mm-hmm.
generate, they produce an income, they produce goods and services. You buy, if you buy rentable space, for example,
mm-hmm.
or you buy advanced technologies, or even infrastructure, these are producing goods and services that make life better. If suddenly all of the technology, all of the tools that have been created for productive purposes vanished, what would happen to billions of people around the world? You see?
Yeah, yeah.
They would begin dying very quickly.
Absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's what's changing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to figure out how to take what's changing, the technology, and make it available to every man, woman, and child so they can become not victims of that technology, not wage slaves or welfare slaves or charity slaves
that's right.
But become owners.
That's right.
Okay,
that's
so that's
right.
Really the solution. The
yeah.
problem is that your politicians, both parties, your unions, your corporations, your finance people, and most particularly your economists, never look at ownership as a way in which you can distribute incomes to every man and child if they could own the new technologies.
That's right. Uh-huh.
So there are barriers that have been erected. And I'm not saying that this is conscious. I'm just saying it doesn't matter whether it's conscious. Those barriers exist.
Mm-hmm.
And we can lift those barriers. We can change the tax system. For example, we add $2 to $3 trillion of new capital every year. It's like a growth ring.
Okay.
And this
okay.
is in the past, so
sure,
we've
sure.
slowed down quite a bit because
uh-huh.
of bad policy.
Mm-hmm.
But this amount, if you take the total U.S. population of over 300 million people,
mm-hmm.
it amounts to about $7,000 per head.
Right.
Now, that means that that family of four that we described before, who are now getting in way over their head with the wrong kind of credit,
right, right,
could, in fact, acquire that ownership, but it would be productive credit. And that's the key.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is productive credit that would flow to every man, woman, and child through what we call capital homesteading.
Okay.
And what that would amount to is, let's say a child was just born into that family.
Mm-hmm.
By the time that child would reach age 65, they would have accumulated under capital homesteading credit, and I'll explain how they would accumulate it, but they would accumulate about close to $500,000, okay?
Uh-huh,
out of,
uh-huh.
And this would be after tax. This would generate a little less than $50,000 of dividend income
mm-hmm.
to that child,
mm-hmm.
and that child from the beginning up through age 65, first it starts very slow because if it was done on credit as we're suggesting, it takes time to pay off each year's allotment of $7,000.
Right, sure, sure.
But they would have accumulated, they would have received, I should say, $1.6 million of dividend incomes. Now, how many people listening to this program will be able to accumulate $1.6 million in dividends over and above whatever they earn?
Especially off of a $7,000 initial investment.
That's right.
I mean, so you're saying this $7,000 productive credit.
Productive credit,
which where will that come?
That's a great question. And you just have to understand what money is. Money is anything that can use to settle a debt. It's not just currency, coin, and paper money. No. The way it comes is the way it came in the past and still comes to a large extent, and that is through what's called bills of exchange. You want to borrow $7,000, you have to show that if you use that to buy newly issued stock, and that stock, the company would have to pay out the dividends fully because they would get a tax deduction by paying out dividends as they do for worker employee stock ownership plans.
Mm-hmm.
Be tax deductible. So you get to the full stream of corporate profits to pay off that loan. So they get a loan to buy shares of stock that are full voting, full dividend bearing stock, and the dividends pay for the shares plus any transaction fees, and thereafter that the dividend incomes flow to the child or to the individual, to the American, through the Capital Homestead account at their local bank. It's just a super IRA, okay?
Well, yeah, I mean, but the whole notion of productive credit is, for me, kind of a new concept. Productive credit meaning that it will be used to invest.
Not speculate.
Okay.
To invest in
something tangible.
Tangible that will generate real marketable goods or services.
Right.
Call them energy slaves. We want to liberate the human slaves.
Yes, indeed.
People to be owners of energy slaves so that the fruits of the energy slaves, which are not people, can help provide them the income, earn an income, to buy whatever the energy slaves or the market system is capable of producing. So this becomes not just a free market system, not just a system based on property, but a system where everybody is able, put in a position where they can become owners. And this is what America should have been, was intended to be by many of the founders, and must become as a model for all countries in the world.
Amen. Hold on, Dr. Kirtland, we're not done yet. Give us another moment or two. We're going to take a brief break right here, and we'll come back, and we're going to spend some more time with you and share more with our listeners. But we're going to continue with the broadcast. Dr. Kirtland, you were about to go into further explanations on this Just Third Way model and talk about the benefits for the unemployed and the poor. Go right ahead, Dr. Kirtland. You're on.
Right. The key is to grow the economy, to be able to produce more, and to be able to export more. We used to be a big exporter. Back in the 40s, during the war, we went from massive unemployment, high levels of unemployment, 15% to 20%, to 25% to zero unemployment. Well, first of all, because we put about 16 million able-bodied people into the military to fight a two-front war, and there was no unemployment. The economy grew by rates of 15% a year. Now, 15% is fast growth. So there was no unemployment. They took people who were unemployed, unemployable, they trained them right on the job. And we were able to add new technologies, very advanced technologies, for war.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I say that once you solve the financing problem, get it away from Wall Street to Main Street so that every person could get an allotment of credit necessary to finance growth at rates higher than today. Today it may be 1% or less. Now, that's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
We can. We certainly should be able to grow 5% and maybe 10%, and finance that growth through capital homesteading.
Okay.
And if we did that, you would. The numbers I gave you would be very conservative.
Wow.
I was just looking at modest growth rates.
Sure, sure, sure.
Now, if you had higher growth rates, the economy, entrepreneurs, corporations would go out and reach out to people. You'd be able to finance the pensions of teachers and policemen and public servants,
mm-hmm,
and others who are getting pensions now that go into costs. Well, they wouldn't go into costs now. You
mm-hmm
see, because you would be connecting people up to the growth capital, the productive capital, through productive credit, not non-productive credit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you would be moving toward a more sustainable economy. We'd be able to not only through our tax system balance the budget of the federal government and the local governments and state governments, and they're all getting into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd be able to finance the productive sector, making every citizen an owner of private sector capital.
Mm.
This goes beyond capitalism. It goes beyond socialism. Capitalism is a system based on greed and taking advantage of people, exploitation of people. Yes, it has a market system, but it is not a just market system. And socialism is not the answer, because that does not connect every citizen into ownership. It puts the government into the position, the politicians into the position of being able to control people's income.
Concentration of wealth and power.
You got it.
Continues.
It's monopolization. Mm-hmm, it's control. Mm-hmm, and that's not good.
No.
If you concentrate power, you're going to lead to corruption.
Yeah.
But what we're talking about is a true democratization of power through the democratization of finance and money power. And as a matter of fact, we would say that the Federal Reserve shouldn't be owned by the bankers.
Right.
And it shouldn't be owned by the Treasury Department.
Right.
Rather, every one of the 12 regional feds ought to be owned by the citizens in that area. Just turn it over to the citizens so that money power would be under the control of the people.
And you can tell that was the intent of the people who created our Constitution. It's supposedly a government by the people, for the people, and of the people.
Exactly. And that's what we have to see.
Yeah.
We have to have a rebirth of America, but a more just America than they had when the founding fathers put together the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
You see,
yeah.
And there every person is important.
Mm-hmm.
The inalienable or God-given rights of people,
mm-hmm.
and the right to be an owner.
Right.
That's built into our wiring system.
Yeah, yeah.
We'd rather own than be owned.
That's right. Why are we looking at passing this Capital Homestead Act by 2012?
Well, it's interesting. 150 years ago it will be 150 years in 2012. It was the Homestead Act by Lincoln,
mm-hmm.
and that was the Homestead Act of 1862. So we think that to save America,
mm-hmm.
before it goes further down the hole,
mm-hmm.
Into bankruptcy, that we need that full-blown Capital Homestead Act, because that reaches out into a new frontier. The Homestead Act of 1862, as you know,
right.
was for land.
Right.
And 60 acres of land, and if they farmed it for 5 years, they were given legal title. This was a very, very important piece of economic legislation. It helped build the farm base, the agricultural base, the food production base of America. And no piece of legislation was more important in terms of where we are today. The problem was the land was not enough, because the land is a limited frontier.
Right.
We're
right.
talking about technology.
Yeah,
there's no limit to the technology frontier. And that's what people should be owning. The rentable space, the robots, the energy slaves
that's
of all kinds.
That's right.
The
that's
infrastructure.
Right.
We can design that.
Yeah.
And it has been designed. If people want to know what we're talking about, all they have to do is visit the website of CESJ.org, and they'll just look at capital homesteading, the summary of the Capital Homestead Act. We even have a book which they can download free, Capital Homesteading for Every Citizen. And then you have this new movement,
which is
a global movement called
the Coalition,
for Capital Homesteading.
Oh, very familiar with it. Very familiar with it. In fact, even in our little state of Connecticut, we have our own chapter in Waterbury, the Waterbury Center for Economic and Social Justice, which is fast becoming the talk of the town. And so
it's great.
We're excited. We're really excited.
Well, clearly I like to see Connecticut, having been born and raised there, becoming one of those states that teach the rest of the states of the Union. It could become the first capital homesteading state in the Union, and by that, by being the model, it can have our Capital Homestead Act passed by next year, 2012. And incidentally, the people in Waterbury set up the meeting where I met with Senator Lieberman. I met with Senator Blumenthal, and also
Congressman Chris Murphy. Chris Murphy is.
And Chris Murphy will be running for Senate. So,
news.
We have made our inputs. We had great meetings with the senator and their staff, and as far as I'm concerned, it's now time for the White House and all these people who are trying to figure out how to save the American economy, what kind of changes.
Right.
We have those changes.
Right.
Now it's up to the people who are listening to this program to get in touch with, first to find out the specifics by going to the websites, and then getting in touch with their political representatives, because there's no question in my mind that when the American people start demanding it, their political leadership will follow.
Absolutely. Dr. Kirlin, we're going to have to take a break right here. We want to thank you for joining the broadcast this morning. We have been talking to Dr. Noam Kirlin from the Center for Economic and Social Justice, one of the architects of the Just Third Way. We have solutions to these problems of desperation and desolation in our country. They just need to be embraced. We're going to continue to do our part, Dr. Kirlin, and we pray that the Lord of the harvest would bring laborers into the vineyard, because truly the harvest is plenteous, but the laborers are few.
Thank you, Russell.
Dr. Kirlin, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take a break right here on the challenge, and we'll be right back. We've got some local interest here that we want to...